I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce several folks, Lee Chun and Steve from our VSS team, and I'll let them explain their roles in development and program management. We also have two representatives, Klaus from our file services team in the program management ownership role for SMB, and Xiaoyu, thank you for joining from the team as well. This is an interesting topic. I know as protocol implementers, you are implementing the SMB3 protocol family and focused on that. So VSS is somewhat tangential to this, and yet it's the protocol which is implemented that by some of you is in the MSS FSRVP document, which is now provided and available on MSDN, as we've talked about. And we saw the test suite. Simon's team has been demonstrating to you how to test the protocol. And so we have that running here in the lab, and we're actually running against some of the implementations. So that's, I just wanted to set a little bit of background about their roles so they can answer the various questions that you may have. And I'll turn it over to Lee Chun to give a little background on VSS, and hopefully this gives you a view of the past and what this application is useful for.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lee Chun Lee, and I'm actually a program manager for VSS, Volume Shadow Copy Surface. And today, we're going to open up this presentation with an overview on the concept and model of VSS, and also some of the resources that you guys can make use of in your development if you're supporting our VSS. And Steve is my manager. He's going to give you guys the overview for now, so I'll just...
All right, can everybody hear me all right? So about 10 years ago, I was a brand fresh GM here of only 3 or 4 years, I was in charge of backup, and the problem that we had that we were trying to address is the fact that there was no way to back up a Windows system. So starting in Windows Server 2000, we started thinking very hard about how to do a backup. So I'm going to talk about VSS in two separate and distinct pieces. One of them is the ability to do the snapshot, and one of them is the backup infrastructure that's wrapped around it. So I'm just going to, I'm not really going to stick to the slides too much, but the main problem we were trying to decide is we handed out a 200-page paper to the backup industry that had private APIs and horrible, disgusting mechanisms to back up a Windows 2000 server. So we came up with two pieces, one of which is the snapshot. And the snapshot is the ability to hold a point in time image of the disk. And there's actually two mechanisms to accomplish this. The first mechanism is by using a copy on write engine, where every time a write happened to the disk, we take the old sector, set it aside in a difference area, and then we allow the write to go through and map the fact that that block, it's not actually a sector, it's a block, had been changed. So that whenever a subsequent read or write came to the disk, you were reading the disk as it was supposed to be moving forward in time. However, we surfaced a second volume that held the disk in place, which means that if you made a read from the disk that had not been modified by a subsequent write, the read would come directly from the disk itself. If you read a block that had a write on it, we recognized from the bitmap that this was a block that had a change, and we went and we presented the block from the difference area, which allows a snapshot. So we have two volumes. One might be C colon, and the other one might be C prime. And C prime is a consistent point in time read-only volume of the one volume that your working volume that's moving along in time. So that technique it's well understood, it's been used in the industry before. There was nothing new about it. but it really doesn't buy you anything. That's what we call crash consistent, which means that, you know, if you sort of unplugged your server and it crashed and everything fell to pieces, and then you looked at the disk, there is data that's in flight that would be inconsistent. And so you might have torn writes, you might have partial results on the disk of things that were in flight at that time. And that's not adequate for a high fidelity backup. So the second piece that we put together with VSS is what we call the writer infrastructure. So a writer is a piece that actually goes into an application that's running, like SQL Server or Exchange or SharePoint. They have a writer, and the writer is notified at the time that a backup is supposed to happen. And the notifications, there are several of them, but the notifications serve to alert the application that a snapshot is about to happen so that it can prepare, meaning if there's logs to roll forward or there's going to be some things that take a little bit more time, they can prepare. And then there's an event that says a snapshot is happening where you have a very limited time to get your data consistent in a consistent state so that if you were to get that data back, you could actually restart the program from the point you left off. And then thirdly, when the snapshot is done, so that the application could pick up and continue to work again. So the net effect of that infrastructure is the awareness of the applications that the snapshot is happening so that we can get better fidelity than just crash consistency. We work very hard to get writers in the services within the server, like DHCP and DNS and WINS, all of the services that are running on an ongoing basis that have state. We work very hard to ensure that there were writers there to ensure that the state was consistent. Then, in addition to that, the writer has the ability to send an XML document to the backup application as part of this that indicates to the backup application exactly the strategy that's going to be moved forward to do the backup and to do the restore. For instance, one of the strategies might be take this file, rename it and restore it to a different location, and then alert me when a restore happens so that I can go look at that location and I can do the work I need to be in the recovery period, the recovery being after a restore has happened, there is some work that needs to be done in order to get the application back up to date. Maybe it's a log, maybe it has to roll the log forward into the database, etc. So there are many, many different strategies that can be used as part of the a restore. And the writers tell which files of things that's important, what registry settings of things are important, the strategy for a backup, the strategy for the restore, all of these kinds of things. So what is wrapped around the snapshot to give it the value is the writer infrastructure. So talking back a little bit on the snapshots, we supported a variety of different types of snapshots. A third party can put its own snapshot piece in there to actually do the snapshotting. So if you have a third party piece of equipment like a storage array, they could actually get the events, register for the events, and they could quiesce the databases and the state. We also had the concept of a Plex, where you could break a Plex into two. This side of the disk would continue moving forward, and this side of the Plex would be your snapshots, and then the copy-on-write engine that support, which is the software snapshot, which is the one that are typically used within the operating system. So that's the 20,000-foot view of the concept of what VSS does. What that ended up doing was it allowed the backup industry the ability to have a consistent way to understand what's running on the machine, to understand what they need in order to do a consistent backup, what they need in order to do a restore and a recovery following the backup. So the two distinct pieces, the snapshotting engine, the backup infrastructure. So in Windows XP was the first time we actually had the snapshot engine. It supported transient backups only. And from Windows XP to, Server 2003, I'm sorry. Server 2003 had the complete transient snapshots, persistent snapshots being snapshots that actually can remain after a backup is done. And they're used for a variety of different purposes. At that time, it was used for system restore. So when you're installing a new driver, you could take a snapshot, and that snapshot would stay there while you move through the driver install process. And at some point, perhaps 2 days in the future, you said, boy, I hate the fact that my machine is crashing. It allowed you to take the data from the snapshot and roll it back into your original disk as a mechanism to recover from the install that just happened. So the snapshots were used for file history. Previous versions, a feature called previous versions. It's also used for system restore, and it's used for backups. So in 2003, the complete VSS infrastructure was put into the server, and Vista and Win 7 still have that complete backup infrastructure. It's been around for about 10 years. Okay, so in this version, the server guys got a hold of it and they decided to add some features, which is the SMB backup. So if your application running on box A actually has state that's running on a share, you would be able to get the data on that share consistent at the same time you're doing the backup of the application on another box. Okay, so that's a 20,000 foot view. All of this well documented in MSDN. If you want to read the overview a little bit more detailed, what's going on, take a look at the APIs. They're all in MSDN. Okay. I think I already covered this. It's actually, if you notice the word providers here, a hardware provider is the one that allows us to coordinate with a backup to do a snapshot on a remote device or even a local device, but like breaking the Plex type snapshots or other, there are other companies who put together snapshots based on VSS where they do it in a third-party array. So that's a provider is the piece that facilitates that. Okay, so given that, I think I've covered most of this stuff. What I wanted to do is there were a number of questions that were sent in. I think we have good coverage of the experts here. What I wanted to do is just sort of open the room up for questions and answers. We don't really know what specifically since this is a feature that's been in for a while, we don't really know what specific questions you have or how why you asked for this presentation. So we'll open it up. Any questions, we can address them right now. Greg has just walked in. He's a VSS developer. And Sean? Yeah, I'm sorry. Is here. He's the developer for the SMB. And so we have all the experts here. I think we can answer any question that you might have. So if you guys want to come up here, we'll just open it up. There were two pages of questions. Yeah, go ahead.
We are using Disk Shadow to test RDSS, and we would like a way to get variable environment, the result of the response sent by the server to the client, in order to automate test suite. Is it possible to get this information?
I'm not sure what you were asking for.
Yeah, in a Disk Shadow tools, you execute a few commands and you get some result. And we would like to extract this information, the result information sent by the server, for example, the name of the share, to put this information in a test script to automate our tools.
So we actually update the Disk Shadow to support the create shadow copy over the SMB for Windows 8. And for scripting, Disk Shadow does support scripting. You can put your Disk Shadow command into a text file, and then there's a /s option in Disk Shadow, which allows you to batch the command into Disk Shadow and then get the result back as redirect output to a text file, then you can pass the text file.
Only on a text file, or because some parameters are already in variable. We could extract news on.
You mean the environment variable?
Yeah.
Supported by this shadow, right?
Yeah.
Right now, I think ideally it will be like a PowerShell support to create shadow copy, but I
think all it does is set the error level for the command prompt. It'll set it to like a non-zero value if it's error, otherwise it's a success. I mean, the messages in disk shadow are well formed, so you could try to parse out the yeah. H results. But yeah, no, there's nothing fancy like PowerShell support or anything like that. Not in this release.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Let me see. Raga, did you have any questions? Okay.
So I guess what I could do is I would be happy to tell you all my email address. And if you do have questions in the future, I can take those questions and redirect them to the appropriate people. Or answer it myself in the rare case that I might actually know something.
Great.
So that those people who have who come up with questions. There were a couple of pages of questions that came in, which I thought was the reason that we put this organization, organized this. But if there are no questions, I'd be happy to just put my email address up there and I'll act as traffic cop and deliver them out to the appropriate people.
Right. And so, as I mentioned earlier also, what we're doing this week with some of the partners here who've implemented the remote VSS, we're running the SMB3 protocol family test suite that we presented on Monday. So there are some test cases for the some of the scenarios that you've described for using the remote VSS protocol. And this test suite's available in the labs for those of you who haven't used it, for those of you that are using it. We'll continue to run those tests, help you to find issues in the implementations, and use it for interoperability test purposes. So we are doing that much. And if, you know, certainly any results we have, Steve, we'll let you know of that. So thank you to all of you for coming over to meet with the partners.
Actually, I want to call out a couple of things. So I just want to ask one question. So is everybody completely aware of why this was implemented in Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8? Why we did the remoting part of it? Okay, then I just want to take a minute to actually give you the backdrop of why it was done. So as an overarching theme in Windows Server 2012, we were going after basically the scenario where you could have a server application, such as a Hyper-V SQL Server or any other application. This is purely from Windows perspective. Use remote SMB file shares for storing Hyper-V virtual machine files, SQL Server databases, whether they be user databases or system databases, right? So you're seeing a lot of the SMB features in SMB 3.0, transparent failover, scale out, direct, and multi-channel that basically aligns to enable this. Now, the VSS for SMB file shares is the extension of the VSS infrastructure to allow such a deployment to actually have a proper backup and recovery mechanism when running in a Windows environment. And the protocol here, the remote, well, we just in daily slang, we call it remote VSS protocol, the FSRVP, is basically the mechanism that goes on between the application server where in the Windows environment Hyper-V or SQL Server is running on and the backend Windows file server where the data is actually stored. Now, the protocol is, of course, public, like it should be. So if you have third-party implementations of either end, you can participate in this ecosystem. And that's basically the backdrop for why this was done in Windows Server 2012.
And
Does that make sense?
And is a file control, what's the mechanism to do that? SMB, is a file control or IO control? How this instruction is given to backup? So my point is, what is the SMB2 coming into picture? What exactly exchange between the SMB2 client and the server?
So this, are we talking specifically for the SMB where I store my databases or Hyper-V remotely?
Exactly.
Well, from a, let's say for Hyper-V deployment, for example, Hyper-V is running on Windows Server 2012 against a Windows file share on a Windows Server 2012 box. Mm-hmm. Hyper-V, all you do is you specify the UNC path where the share is. And then Hyper-V stores this virtual machine files there.
Yeah, I understand that, the read-write part. But the when you do the shadow copy.
The shadow copy
part.
Yeah,
there's the instruction going, it's implemented over, is there a special FCNTL file control function on that? Or
you want to cover that, Sayu?
It is RPC protocol implemented.
Is there another name pipe or existing?
It is the name pipe. So the name pipe is called FSS agent. That is the name pipe.
And that's in the FSRVP specification.
Another quick thing is that I just published a blog post talking about the Windows Server 2012 specifics around this particular area. So if you want to refer to that in the future, you can go look at it or ask me specific questions. I'll give you the link so you can pass it around. That basically talks about the scenarios that we were thinking about when we did the original implementation of this, what is in a pure Windows implementation, what is supported and what is not supported in terms of deployments. Obviously, they'll be different depending on who the backend storage is. They may support more or less. So, but just to give you a specific backdrop of the Windows part of it.
Great. Now, for the interoperability testing, because as Klaus mentioned, Hyper-V and SQL are simply applications, and they use a UNC to access a remote SMB storage server, which you, many of you here, are implementing. So in the lab right now, we're simply using SQL Server and Hyper-V Server as a means of generating client traffic. It's a client test. So some of you are actually running tests in this very scenario in the lab right now. So that is one scenario that is being utilized in the lab. Also, on Thursday, Klaus will be helping with some of our presentation regarding the. We'll have two presentations on Thursday. One covering the Hyper-V over SMB3 scenario, and what are the SMB3 requirements in particular that facilitate these scenarios. So hopefully this background about these scenarios is helpful to you from a protocol implementation perspective. I know that from the testing that's been taking place, there's been some interesting interactions that have been identified. There have been issues and resolved as a result, so I think that's been useful in the testing done over the last number of months. So we thank you for that feedback at a number of levels. And hopefully, this is helpful to you as implementers.
So did all that information foster more questions? Or is it all clear?
You know, this stuff doesn't actually become a question until you're actually doing it.
Exactly, yeah. We're just hoping you were doing it so we could have questions.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you again. We'll wrap it up for now. Thanks.